Hey everyone, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
Writers at RVFTA.com.
And the authors of The Idiot's Guide to RV Vacations.
About 10 years ago, we had a couple of babies and a marriage that was on the rocks.
So we bought an RV and we started camping. The rest, as they say, is history.
Join us as we talk about where to camp, what gear to bring, and the best food to cook.
We'll also keep you dialed in to the latest RV innovations from people in the know.
So pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the RV Atlas. And I'm just incredibly excited to have Gretchen from Boxy Colonial here, and she's taking us on an epic road trip out in the Pacific Northwest, which was like my favorite trip ever. And today she's going to be covering the Volcanic Legacy Scenic Byway. It's a 500-mile route out there in the Pacific Northwest. And I'll be honest, I know very little bit about this. I mean, this has got me so excited to go back to the Pacific Northwest. I cannot wait to dive in and hear about all of Gretchen's tips. But before we do that, we need to thank our sponsors, Jayco and Thetford.
The RV Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com to see a complete lineup of trailers. Jayco, generations of family fun. And also, we're sponsored by Thetford. Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. And mostly, they make the RV travel a more pleasant experience because they help you keep everything in your RV, your home on wheels, operating in tip-top condition, and most importantly, not smelling at all.
And we dry camped in the Eagle last weekend, and I had already winterized, and we brought our Thetford porta potty, and I dropped in some Aquachem. Stephanie wasn't exactly thrilled with the whole situation, but
I had just finally upgraded to a porcelain toilet for the first time in my entire life in an RV in the Eagle, and then on our very second camping trip in it, I was reduced to using a porta potty.
People out there saying, "Oh, well, you can use your toilet and flush with antifreeze," but I was actually. I just didn't want to go to the dump station.
So I was forced to use the porta potty. However, I will say that the porta potty is really a fantastic option for that. I might be complaining, but it operates just perfectly for our family of five.
It's not porcelain.
It really does. So it has the cassette, you know, part that just, it doesn't smell. It didn't smell at all.
These Thetford porta potties, I'm thinking of keeping one out in the garage for goodness sake.
And the bathhouses aren't that great at the county park that we were at. So like my boys, believe me, they use this porta potty. They are like brutal about not going to the bathhouse. So head on over to Thetford.com. You can see a complete lineup of their products, including porta potties, but also great tank cleaners, freshwater tank sanitizers, and good old tank blaster that'll keep all of those level gauges telling you when you're getting full and have to go to the dump station.
They need a compact portable porcelain toilet.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. I'm telling you, I got used to that porcelain potty really quickly. All right.
Gretchen, welcome to the show, and I just feel like I'm so greedy today, like this episode is just for me because I'm just dying to do this trip. So welcome back. We're so glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk the Volcanic Legacy Scenic Byway and just get us started a little bit with kind of the general geography of the Pacific Northwest's Cascade Range, which we did not get out to.
Well, we got to Crater Lake, but we did a really quick loop around there. Whereas Gretchen, who was out there almost at the same time, really spent a lot of, this was their, like the bulk of their trip. So Gretchen, just get us situated geographically.
Okay, so this is the Cascade Range. The Legacy Scenic Byway runs from a little town in Oregon down to Lassen Volcanic in California. So that's sort of inland in Oregon and Northern California. And what's interesting about the Cascade Range is it's part of the Pacific Ocean's Ring of Fire. So it's all formed by volcanoes. So the whole region was formed by volcanoes tens of thousands of years ago and hundreds of thousands of years ago. But it's also still a really active volcanic region today. So you might go to Yellowstone and hear about the eruption hundreds of thousands of years ago. But here, I think I read that all of the eruptions in the past 300 years, I think, in the lower 48 states have been in this region. So, of course, there was Mount St. Helens and Lassen also erupted just in 1914, 1915. So this is still a very active, alive region where you can see the landscape still being shaped today by all these volcanoes.
Now, you planned your trip from the north to the south, and I think that that's how you're going to take us through this trip planner, right?
Right.
So we're going to start at the beginning of your trip, and we're just going to go through every stop, and you're going to tell us where you stayed and what you guys loved doing in that area?
Yeah, sounds good. So, and we were actually, this was part of a longer trip where we kind of made a loop around the country. So we were coming over from the east and from Yellowstone and Idaho. And then we met up with my sister-in-law and her family. She has her husband and two kids in Bend, Oregon. So that's where we're going to kind of kick off this part of our trip. Bend is actually about an hour north of the official start of the byway, but it has a lot of volcanic stuff going on too, and it's just a really nice little town, or small city, I guess. So it's a really good place to kick off this road trip if you're going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, incredibly hip, too.
Oh my gosh, like, that's like, Bend is on the cover of Outside Magazine like four times a year, I think.
Yeah. All right, so tell us about Bend.
Okay, so in Bend, we stayed at Tumalo State Park. Right, I'm going to make sure I don't get my state parks mixed up. But yes, we stayed at Tumalo State Park, which is just about 15 minutes from downtown Bend. And they have 20-something full hookup RV sites and a lot of primitive sites. And they also have yurts. So that worked well for us since we were with our non-RVing relatives. They stayed in one of the yurts, and we stayed in one of the RV sites. The RV sites are really nice paved asphalt sites that were easy to back into. We had our 34-foot toy hauler, and again, full hookups, and it was just $36 a night. So we thought it was a great bargain and a really nice setting and a great base camp for exploring Bend.
And the setting, you're right on the river, correct?
Yes, it's right on the Deschutes River. So there's a day use area kind of across the street from the campground. So we went down there. It was really hot when we were there, even though it was late June. So we went there along with, I think, everyone else in the city of Bend when we got there. It was very crowded, but they have a nice area where you can wade into the river. And you also can do, we had, the kids had some float things, some inner tubes, I guess. And they floated a little bit down and then came out in another area, just not far at all. They could just walk right back. But I went down to see them one time and realized that the river got a little faster in that area that they were in than I expected, but it still worked out. So
they made it to the end. Okay. So what else did you do in the area right around Bend?
We went to the High Desert Museum. Bend is in the High Desert. So, it's a nice museum that has indoor and outdoor areas, and it kind of covers the natural history of the area and also the human history. They have a big exhibit hall where you go through, and it goes back to when it was just Native Americans there, and then takes you through settlement by Europeans, and you can see all of that. They also have things like live animal shows. They have some adorable porcupines that live there. Outdoors, they have like a sawmill area, like a restored sawmill, and they'll do demonstrations there and show you how the sawmill works. So that was a cool stop and good for all ages of kids and for adults, really interesting. There's also, we didn't go here, but if you really want to start off your volcano intensive activities, there's the Newberry National Volcanic Monument. I think it's about a half an hour south of town. And you can see the Newberry Caldera there and kind of learn about how volcanoes have formed this region of the country.
All right. Generally speaking, Bend is known for some craft beer, correct?
It is. There's a lot of breweries, and we were only able to get to a couple of them. One we enjoyed is right downtown is Deschutes Brewery, and they also have a food menu and a big selection of beer. So if you can only get to one, then that one's kind of, I think, iconic and one of the older ones there.
And go there after tubing, not before.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, from Bend, we're going to head south on this pretty epic road trip. And where to next?
Okay. So you're going to actually pick up the scenic byway. And it's just south of the town of Chomult, which I have no idea what's in Chomult, except that it's where the byway starts. So if you're going from Bend, you're going to go about 106 miles to get down to the Crater Lake area. And at Crater, which was our next big stop, at Crater Lake, we stayed at another state park campground, which I have to find the name of, Collier Memorial State Park. So they do have campgrounds in Crater Lake, and I think a few of them have electric hookups, but I think it's really hard to get. So we didn't stay in Crater Lake. We stayed at the state park about half an hour away.
Yeah, so I'll just, Gretchen, I'll just say that Shelley actually did a review of the Mazama Campground in Crater Lake National Park a while ago on our podcast. I'll link to that in the show notes. She definitely made it clear that she loved this campground because of its proximity to Crater Lake, not because of any of the amenities in the campground. It was one of those national park campgrounds that's like a parking lot, you know, for your RV, and but then you go,
but it puts you right there.
So it's nice. So I'll link that for other people to have that option. But then it's nice to know about this option just a little
bit outside.
And it's so nice because
it's remote out there. I mean, that's the way it struck me. Like, it's not like there's 12 campgrounds to choose from. I mean,
okay, so you guys stayed at Collier Memorial State Park, and just tell us a little bit about that.
Right. So this is another Oregon State Park, another really cheap one. We had full hookups here too, and it was $29 a night. So even cheaper than the last one. They didn't have anything besides RV and tent sites. So my relatives did. They got an Airbnb kind of place a few minutes away. But they had two loops with some nice full hookup sites. You do want to be careful with site selection here because we had a little trouble getting into our site, mostly because there were some giant rocks kind of right across from it.
Rocks and trees, Gretchen, rocks and trees.
Whether she's on the East Coast on Prince Edward Island or on the West Coast, Gretchen finds sites
I love it.
With rocks and
we
trees.
We understand your drama. I mean, gosh, I mean, anybody that listened to our recent podcast about saying goodbye to the toy hauler was like, we're just not 34-foot trailer people.
But we did get in and it was fine, but you do want to be careful when you're picking your site. That if you have a bigger trailer that you can get in. So a really nice thing about Collier Memorial is that the park also maintains a outdoor logging museum. So you can take, it was just like a 10-minute really pleasant walk by this little super remarkably clear mountain stream. And you get to this logging museum, which is not staffed at all, or at least it wasn't when we were there, but they have just all this old logging equipment, and it kind of takes you through time, like from the earliest days of logging in the area to more modern things, and you just look at all this old, rusted out equipment, which is just kind of one of my favorite things, the remains of industry.
And Crater Lake is just incredible. Like, I mean, the Pacific Northwest was my dream trip. My one, you know, slightly minor regret is just we were in and out of Crater Lake so quickly. But you guys spent a decent amount of time there.
Well, we just had one full day there, so we didn't spend that much time there. But yeah, it's, you know, the connection with Crater Lake and volcanoes is that Crater Lake was formed by an eruption a little over 7,000 years ago. And so the water it's the deepest lake in the United States, and the water's incredibly blue, just unbelievably blue and clear, because the only water that comes in is from rainfall, and the only water that goes out is from evaporation. So it was actually, this was the story of this part of our trip, was that this had been a winter with a ton of snow, so some of Crater Lake was not accessible yet. So we had intended to do the boat ride out to, there's a little island called Wizard Island in the middle of the lake. And we had planned on doing the boat ride out there and then maybe hiking up to the top of that island. But the boat dock was not yet accessible. So we weren't able to do that. So we did some hiking and gawked at the lake and did the Junior Ranger program.
And I remember really that from your social media posts at the time when we were out there, and we got there a little later than you. And we were there in July, and there was still plenty of snow on the ground for the boys
to
play
with.
Yeah. So we'll link to also to, like I said, Shelley's review of Crater Lake if any of our listeners are thinking of going, and then also our episode on Crater Lake and what we did also to just if people are planning on that. And I have to give a shout out. It was still one of the best NPS movies that we've ever seen. It was a really good visitor center movie.
And it's not even in like a theater. It was like on a little old TV.
Yeah, people are like sitting on the floor and everything. But it was actually a movie that taught you about the, you know, Crater Lake.
It was educational and not like mystical and spiritual.
There wasn't like crazy music playing.
There's that whole genre of the national park movies that are all like mystical and spiritual with like Yanni music in the background.
I'm just saying, like, it's just like word salad too.
All right, we are going to come back and Gretchen's going to take us south of Crater Lake and we're going to get to California. But before we do that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
Jayco has helped generation after generation create family memories since 1968. Offering travel trailers, fifth wheels, toy haulers, Class C and Class A motorhomes, it's easy to find the perfect Jayco for your family. With an industry-leading two-year limited warranty, beautiful design, and innovative safety features, you can be confident in your Jayco. Visit your local dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
All right, Gretchen, we're going to head south. Just kind of a general question. I just have to ask, is the scenic byway really beautiful the whole way? I mean, is the drive itself part of the experience? Because when we've been on scenic byways, like I'm thinking of the one in the White Mountains in New Hampshire, which I'm forgetting the name of, they're usually often just stunningly beautiful drives. Is that the case here, or is it just more about the destinations along the way?
No, it's a really pretty drive. The part that I remember the most vividly is the last leg of it going down to Lassen, because you actually are taking, if you stay on the byway, a longer way around. Like Google Maps will put you through the mountains, which is probably not a good idea anyway if you're towing. But if you take the byway, you're going to go all around Mount Shasta. So I just remember a lot of the drive. We just had these views of Mount Shasta because we were just kind of circling around it.
All right. So take us to the next stop on your trip. Where'd you stay and what'd you do?
Okay, so it's just about an hour south of here was our next stop, an hour south of Crater Lake. And that is to Tula Lake, California. You're into California now. And Lava Beds National Monument, which I know you guys talked about. Is it the Abe Caves?
Yes, right. So the Ape Caves were up in Mount St. Helens area. Yep.
Okay, so this is similar to that. It's caves that are formed by lava flow, or that were formed by lava flow. And so this is a really remote area, so there's not many visitors there, but it's just a system of, or a collection of caves. I think there's something like 30 caves that are developed there. So you stop by the visitor center, and they'll kind of help you out with what the best ones are for your group, because they're kind of rated as easy and then moderate and difficult. And we did, I think, four different caves. So the first one, the only one that has lights and handrails and that kind of thing, is the Mushpot Cave right by the visitor center. So if you have really young kids or people in your group with mobility issues, that's probably the only one that you're going to get to. But then you go out on this Park Loop Road and you can stop at all these different ones. You have to they'll lend you flashlights at the visitor center. So you want to take those, and you also want to have backup sources of light, because there are no lights in all except that one cave. There are no lights, no handrails, no nothing. So we went, the first one we went in was the Golden Dome, and that was actually rated a moderate. So we accidentally did that one first, and you have to get through, they call it Headache Rock, because you have to kind of duck under this rock as you're going down the ladder. And then it kind of just winds around in there. And it's fun for kids because, again, it's completely dark. It's not like a developed cave tour where maybe there's a moment at the end where they turn out all the lights and it's a big reveal how dark it is in there. It's just dark the whole time, and except for whatever light you've brought with you. We did a few caves there. The Upper Sentinel is the one that I would kind of recommend for a little bit older, adventurous kids, because it's still rated an easy cave. But it's about a mile long, and there is kind of some places where you have to scramble over some rocks and where the floor is really uneven. So it feels like you're really in a cave and doing some real caving, even though you're not crawling on your belly kind of caving.
All right. Now, this is a pretty remote location. So what's up for lodging? Where can you camp?
So the only place we could find was Hawk's Nest Tyonesta, which is a campground about 15 minutes from the National Monument. And they also have some cabins that are historic railroad camp cabins that they've converted or restored that they rent out. It's you know, no frills camping. We did have a perfectly nice pull through site. There's no kind of amenities or anything. Although I did read that it's under new management now, and it sounds like they are making some upgrades to it, so they might have a little bit more going on now. But it was perfectly nice, and it was very convenient. But just kind of, again, rustic, bare bones campground.
I love how Gretchen keeps up with the campgrounds that she's visited over the years.
She's tuning in. She spends time. Like I said, she gets through. Like, she travels a ridiculous amount in the summer. And then she gets through the next 9 months by just writing these, like, incredible travel logs of these places with, like, every detail that you could possibly want. I love it. All right. What was the next stop, Gretchen?
Okay, so after we left Lava Beds, this was the longest drive that we did. It's about 3 hours, 180 miles. Again, you're going around Mount Shasta that whole time, and then you get to Lassen Volcanic National Park. And again, this was where we were impeded by snow. So the road through, and we were to July by now. We were actually there July 4th weekend. And the road through the park was not yet opened. So I hear that there's a really, really nice visitor center on the south side of the park. We did not get to go to that because we would have had to drive around, and it would have been like 2 more hours.
Okay.
And that's where kind of the big trail that goes through all the geothermal features of the park is, which is called Bumpus Hell. And they have a boardwalk trail and take you through, and you see like fumaroles and hot springs and all of that. Again, we didn't get to do that. So we spent our time on the north side of the park. We went to the visitor center there, and then we did a really nice hike around, I think it's pronounced Manzanita Lake. And that's an easy, I think it was maybe a 2 mile loop, something like that. But you have really nice views of the lake the whole time. And also you can see Mount Lassen reflected in the waters of the lake on clear days. And it's just really beautiful. And again, an easy hike for if you have kids with you or anything like that.
Now, Gretchen, did you keep up sort of like, were you paying attention after you left to how long it was before that road was open from, you know, from the snow? Was it into like, should people plan, you know, we just talked about this with Glacier. Like, if people really want to be guaranteed to, you know, get on these roads and to be able to see the whole park, do they have to kind of plan mid-July or later?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't check after how long it was before it finally opened up, but I had checked when I saw that it was still closed, and I think there had only been like 2 times in 30 years when it had been this late in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, usually you can count on it being open if you're there in July, but if you want to be super safe, I mean, because, you know, you're booking probably at least 6 months out or whatever, then, yeah, I mean, I would say mid-July definitely to be safe.
Did the snow, did it make it like an adventure, or was it sort of an irritation, or both?
The snow at Crater Lake was fun. We were saying we should have brought sleds, but at Lassen, there wasn't that much snow to see. It was just you couldn't get through the road. So it actually just made the north side of the park really crowded, which is, I mean, Lassen's reputation is that it's this kind of underrated gem, and you're going to have it all to yourself. If you're there on July 4th weekend and people can't get to half the park, that was not, like, we did find it pretty crowded. So it was mostly an irritation in our case.
But where did you stay while you were here?
We stayed at, I think to this day, our favorite KOA ever, which is the Mount Lassen Shingletown KOA, which is just a few minutes down the road from the park, from that north side of the park. And it was just lovely. They had really nice RV sites. We didn't have a deluxe site, but some of the deluxe sites were almost like their own private lot. They had like fences around them, and you had like this patio, and you wouldn't even be able to see your neighbors. They had really nice cabins. My in-laws, by this time, my mother and father-in-law were there too. So we had two different cabins that we got to go in, and they were both really nice. We had a really nice pull through right near the front of the campground. And then they just had kind of every thoughtful little amenity and detail that you could think of. There was a playground, a small pool. They had this giant wooded area that had just all kinds of activities back in there. There was a tree swing, like a course for RV or RC cars. Is that what the radio control cars to race around on? They had, you know, basketball, tetherball, all this kind of stuff. And they did movies on Friday nights with free popcorn. And on Saturdays, they had an ice cream social. So we kind of weren't at Lassen that long on Saturday because there wasn't as that much to do since the park was since we couldn't get through to some of the park. And also my then 4-year-old was having a really grumpy day. So it was really great to go back to that campground. The kids could play with their cousins and we did the ice cream social, and it was just a really nice place to go back to after.
How
after.
Perfect. Considering,
yeah, campgrounds with amenities can really save you in those kinds of situations.
Considering that, you know, the actual visiting the park wasn't everything that you wanted it to be, how nice to go back to a campground that was tons of fun. Oh my gosh, I want to check out
Gretchen,
this KOA.
I want to say, I don't know if we said this before, how long was that? Did you take to go from the beginning of this trip that we just started up in Bend down to Lassen?
I think it was 7 nights altogether. So we had 2 in Bend, 2 at Crater Lake, 1 night at Lava Beds, and 2 at Lassen.
And how did you feel about the timing of that? Would you have preferred more, or did you feel like it was just right?
I think it was good. I mean, just about anywhere I could say I could have used more time. But if all of Lassen had been open, then another day at Lassen would have been great. But for the most part, it felt pretty good.
What was your favorite memory from this epic road trip?
Oh, wow. My kids, I think probably the lava beds, just because I think they could have stayed there.
Yeah.
They could have used days at the lava beds just looking through those caves.
Yeah. So our boys still talk about the ape caves. I was going to ask you that
highlight.
Before. Like, yeah, I think that the ape caves were a highlight for them when we were at, you know, up at
Mount St. Helens
for sure. And what about you?
Well, this is, again, sort of kid-centric, but I think just seeing my kids at the Lassen KOA, like playing with their cousins, they were just off for hours. And then also at Tumalo State Park, right behind our campsite, there were these giant rocks that went up into this desert area, and just seeing them scramble over the rocks and just have fun. Even my teenage kids who are old and jaded, just playing with their cousins like they were little again was really great.
It's just a performance, the jaded thing when you're a teenager. You guys have given your kids such amazing RV memories and travel memories. And I just, like, this whole episode, I'm just thinking, man, you guys have really done this right. Like, this is why we all get into RVing when we have kids and why we want to travel with them. And, like, I'm just picturing your kids as, like, old men, you know, reminiscing about all these crazy adventures they had, you know, summer after summer with you guys. So hats off to you guys for doing all this travel with them.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this itinerary. And I just want to remind everybody that not only are we going to have every one of the stops and the campgrounds that Gretchen mentioned on the website at thervatlas.com, we'll also have links to her detailed blog posts about all these stops that she has on her blog over at Boxy Colonial on the Road. So you can really piece together a fantastic vacation just using those resources.
And you should be following Gretchen because she takes great photographs too. So where can everybody follow you?
I am. My travel blog is boxycolonialontheroad.com. And then I'm Boxy Colonial on the Road at Instagram and Facebook too, and I'm on Pinterest as just Boxy Colonial.
And the Creative Action Network is using one of your photos for marketing, right? isn't that true?
I know at some point they asked me to. Yeah, it's my 6-year-old has a national parks themed bedroom.
His bedroom is ridiculously awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was so fantastic. So,
for sure.
Gretchen, thank you so much
for taking us
on this.
We'll see you at the campground.
Road trip. We'll see you at the campground.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of the RV Atlas, and a big thanks to the sponsors of this show: Jayco, Bass Pro Cabela's, Thetford, Go Power, and Go RVing. We appreciate their support in creating educational and inspirational RV content.
You can also find links to everything mentioned in this episode over at rvfta.com, plus hundreds of blog posts on everything from gear recommendations to our favorite camping recipes.
If you enjoy our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen, and make sure to get social with us on Facebook at The RV Atlas and on Instagram at Jeremy and Stephanie. Plus, we've got the friendliest campers around in our private Facebook group, so check it out.
Until next time, I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Stephanie.
And we'll see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.